This is a Steam Studio production.
Welcome to the Steam Spotlight, where we celebrate the inspiring achievements of students, educators, and community partners making waves in the Steam field.
For this episode of the Steam Studio Spotlight, we are so excited to be talking with Yuko Asada, a Fulbright scholar and the musical instrument technician at Northern Illinois University, where she builds and tunes steel pans, teaches steel pan construction, and serves as the middle school steel band director at the NIU Percussion Camp. Yuko regularly collaborates with engineering students to bridge the gap between music and technology. A steel pan builder, tuner, educator, performer, composer, arranger, and transcriber, Yuko holds a Bachelor's of Arts degree from West Virginia University and a Master's of Music degree, along with a Performer's Certificate in Steel Pan from NIU. Yuko has taught steel band at elementary, middle, high school, university, and community levels. She has presented her work at national and international conferences, including the Young Women's Conference in Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics at Princeton University, the International Conference in Panorama, the World Steel Pan Day Conference in Trinidad and Tobago, and the National Society of Steel Band Educators Conference. In addition, Yuko has conducted workshops in the U.S., Japan, and Thailand, and has served as an adjudicator and clinician for numerous steel pan festivals. In recognition of her contributions to the steel pan art form, Yuko was featured in the Japanese documentary translated to English called Earthmail in 2017 and twice in 2020, and also appeared in the 2022 documentary Women in Pan, produced in Trinidad and Tobago.
Well, Yuko, welcome so much. We're so excited to have you in the Steam Studio today. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, and thank you for having me.
So I love listening to you talk about what you do because it's so, so interesting. But can you tell our listeners a little bit about what do you do? What's your background?
Okay, so I started playing the piano when I was little. Then I fell in love with the steel pan when I started going to West Virginia University where I was a piano major. And I just fell in love with it so much so that while I was a student there, I traveled to Trinidad and Tobago, where I am right now, to perform in a Panorama steel band competition, which is the largest steel band competition in the world. And in Trinidad, I actually learned about NIU and the steel pan program at NIU. And I contacted Professor G. Allen O'Connor and Dr. Clifford Alexis, and expressed my interest in coming to NIU to learn how to build and tune steel pans. So I started as a steel pan major, as a master's student at NIU, that is where I started to learn how to play various types of steel pans. I started to arrange, compose, and transcribe for steel bands. And I started to teach, and I just learned how to build and tune and became more and more interested in becoming a better steel pan builder and tuner. And fast forward, I now work at NIU as a steel pan musical instrument technician, where I tune and also build and replace some of the steel pans. And that's basically it.
Yeah. So from piano player to, like, what drew you to the steel pans? Was the piano the only instrument you played, or did you have several? And then all of a sudden, like, they're very different.
Well, that's true. Well, actually, when I was in high school, I joined a marching band and I played percussion because, you know, mm-hmm. of course, they don't have piano. So, right. you know, like playing a marimba was like something similar to the piano. Then I fell in love with playing percussion and just percussion in general. And when I was introduced to the steel pan, I was like, oh, wow, this is so exciting. I fell in love with the music. And the more I learned about the culture of Trinidad and Tobago, I just wanted to just learn more and more and play more and more.
I have so many fond memories of NIU Steel Pan because growing up around here, they would come to our school and play. And I remember just being, it's fascinating to hear them. And you're, how is that sound
right.
coming from a steel drum or a pan? Yep. And so what moved you from playing to building? Because that not everybody makes that jump.
Right. So when I went to West Virginia University, they had a master, legend, icon, pioneer, the late Dr. Ellie Manette from Trinidad and Tobago, who was everything. He was the band leader, he built in tune, and he performed, and he was at West Virginia University teaching students how to build steel pans, and he manufactured steel pans. So students like me, we were exposed to Ellie, and a lot of us would visit his workshop, and I just fell in love with it. And just like what you said, Kristen, like I had no idea how that sound was produced from an oil drum. So I just wanted to learn how to do it. But I was only introduced to steel pan tuning at West Virginia University, and at NIU, meeting Cliff Alexis is where I started to learn the process of building and tuning.
That's awesome. I know, so you've been doing this for how many years have you been building and tuning?
Since I was, I was 22, 23, so I guess, not 40.
It just feels that way, right?
Yeah, and I'm revealing my age now. But
I was going to say, without revealing your age, if you don't want to.
Yeah, oh, it's okay. And so for about like 25 years or so.
How has the process and the technology changed, or has it changed since you've been doing this?
Yes. So when I first started learning how to build, I used a six-pound sledgehammer.
Oh my goodness.
And I was just pound for hours. And I'm quite, once I'm focused, I don't even know, like, you know, how much time had passed, you know, things like that. So I would just work and work and work for hours at a time until I damaged my back. So I switched from a 6-pound sledgehammer to a 4-pound sledgehammer and continue on the same process. Yeah, then eventually we got a pneumatic hammer. But even then, it was quite heavy, so I had to hold a pneumatic hammer while it was pounding, so and I had to control it. And later on, another steel pan manufacturer told me, Yuko, that hammer is not, you know, a good hammer. It's too heavy, and you're not able to control it because the foot pedal I was using was not adjustable. It would just be on or off. So I was able to purchase a foot pedal that was adjustable. I was able to purchase different sizes of air hammers that were more adequate, especially for me, because the majority of steel pan builders and tuners are men. So, you know, naturally they're stronger. So I would get tired easier. I couldn't handle as much work. So the updated tools and equipment made a significant difference because I had to stop building for a while because of the tools I was using were just too heavy and I couldn't handle them. So I just had to stop building altogether. But now I'm able to build again. What a lot of people have invested time in to look into utilizing different forms of creating, shaping metal. So like incremental sheet forming, hydroforming, robotics. And that's actually something I'm exploring right now at NIU. So that way, even though I do enjoy creating the steel pan by hand, The number of steel pan builders and tuners are scarce in comparison to the number of steel pan performers. Steel bands are not equal. So there's a big shortage in steel pan builders and tuners. And that's one of the research that I'm doing in Trinidad and Tobago to address that.
That's very cool. I can imagine. I used to work in metal forming, so I can imagine like there might be some really interesting ways to try to automate it, but you really like you can't automate it. Really, there's still a lot of hand crafting that needs to go into it, right?
Yes. So the building process, I believe, can be done by automating it, but the tuning process, most likely need to be done by hand. But I actually met with two engineering professors from NIU just this week, and they actually suggested, do you want us to, you know, perhaps work on creating a process where steel pans can be tuned utilizing robotics? So I'm like, oh, I never even thought of that.
Yeah, I love that intersection of the arts and the science and engineering of it all. What's the lifespan of a steel pan? Like once you've made one, and then how often do you have to tune?
So we recommend as an instrument to be tuned once a year, but it really depends on the quality of the instrument itself. So people had to use discarded oil drums, so used oil drums in the past. And they couldn't really specify the gauge, you know, anything like that. Like people had to just get whatever they could get. And then people started to be able to specify the gauge and ordering them from steel drum manufacturers. So that's more standardized now. But there's a manufacturer in Akron, Ohio, who builds his steel pans using sheet metal. And he doesn't have to stick with a 55-gallon oil drum. So he's able to create something larger. And so that way he can use the right amount of space for each musical note, create each enough space in between notes, things like that. So yeah, something like that is developing. And because of that, his pans don't need to be tuned as much. Because he's figured out the right size, the right gauge. And he's quite unique because his background is in computer science and physics. And his name is Lori. Yeah. So I'm learning so much. And, you know, like I said, I've been here in Trinidad for a month. So I'm starting to get to speak with steel pan builders and teachers, manufacturers. So I'm hoping to learn a lot from people from here as well.
That's what I was going to ask is what's your goal being down there? Aside from the fact that it's beautiful and amazing, what are your main goals and what do you hope to accomplish?
So I am learning different methods of steel pan building and tuning here in Trinidad and Tobago. And traditionally, they've been manufactured by hand by master tuners, master builders. And people would learn from them by going to a pan yard, which is a communal space where steel band rehearsals happen. People used to build and tune steel pans at some pan yards. That does still happen. Events take place. So I'm learning the traditional way of making steel pans. But there has been a program that was developed, and I had no idea until I was here. And the program is called the Steel Pan Manufacturing Program for secondary and tertiary students. The program was developed by the Pan in Schools Coordinating Council. And it was available for 9 secondary school students where teachers would teach how to build and tune. And it's curricular. And once students completed the program, they would go to a university to continue on that education in steel pan building and tuning. So
that's so cool.
Yeah. So I hope to present at the end of my my trip in Trinidad at the University of West Indies. and try to write an academic paper. Research is not my background, but I'm going to try my best to try to do that. So
it's got to be amazing to just be there and be immersed in the culture of the instruments, the band, the people, and especially because it's been such a part of your life for so long.
Yeah, it's been so special because there's so many people who have been involved in the art form of steel pan since they were little. They were exposed to steel bands just rehearsing. Like I'm by a high school, girls' high school. It's just like maybe like a 3-minute walk. And in the afternoon, I would start hearing them practicing. So people here are very much exposed to the steel pan since they were born. And it's just so easy to access. And it's not just a musical instrument. It's not just music, but it's part of their lives. You know, it's part of their passion and part of their culture. So I've been so lucky to be around people from Trinidad and Tobago who have been involved, deeply involved in the steel pan.
So you said you also do composing and transcribing. So yeah. When did you start doing the composition side of things? Have you always been interested in that?
I was actually interested in composing when I was a student at West Virginia University when I was a piano major. And I was a composition major for like a semester because I wanted to compose computer or video game music. So I was actually interested in composing, but I didn't start composing until I was a student at NIU, but I started to arrange a lot of music because there just simply aren't a lot of music, original music available for steel bands, because in Trinidad and Tobago, a lot of music is taught by rote, or they would play, they would give performers, play ABC and so on, so on. So music wasn't notated. That wasn't the tradition. Now, you know, music is notated here as well. So it was important for us to be able to create our own music. And that's the tradition from Trinidad and Tobago. People arrange music. They would take a calypso or soca from Trinidad and Tobago and arrange, or they would take a classical piece, a pop tune, and arrange music. So at NIU, we started to do that. And transcription was something that I started doing at NIU as well. Cliff Alexis composed and arranged music, but he didn't notate music. So it was us students who notated music for him. And I really enjoyed the process. So I started to transcribe a lot of music for Cliff. Then because I was doing well, I was introduced to a gentleman named the late Mark Loquan from Trinidad and Tobago, who had a organization called Music Literacy Trust, where he notated a lot of music from Trinidad and Tobago. And eventually he and my friend, Dr. Mia Gormandy-Benjamin, created an organization called, a company called Pan Notation that sells a lot of music, not only for people from Trinidad and Tobago, but also for people from the world. So I've been transcribing a lot of music for steel band, and that's actually something I'm doing right now as well. Yeah, because when I first came to Trinidad and I started contacting people, but everybody's so busy and nothing was happening. So I texted my friend and asked, "Do you have any music I can transcribe?" And he was like, "Yes." And he has a performance in a month and he's extremely busy. So it actually helped him out because he was to transcribe that music, but he was busy. So I had time during the first couple of weeks. I was like, okay, I need to do something. So yeah, he was able to send me some music and I was able to transcribe that music. And then also my friend Mia needed to have her music for her steel band to be transcribed. So I did that as well. Yeah, I just can't sit still and do nothing.
Yuko, that's amazing. Your whole story, your enthusiasm, it comes through within the first 5 seconds of talking to you. So again, thank you for doing this and teaching us about it. As you've grown in this artistry and this profession and then your passion, have you had to work to get into the culture, especially when you're going to where it came from? And I could see maybe some of the people that have a much longer tenure with this art almost being protective of it in a sincere way. How have you navigated that, or has it been?
So what was extremely helpful was Cliff Alexis, because he was from Trinidad, and of course Professor Liam Teague as well, and he's also from Trinidad and Tobago. So Cliff in particular just always spoke about, you know, his experiences in Trinidad and Tobago, and he was very much involved with everything that was happening here, and Professor Teague as well. Yeah, they both connected so many NIU students and other students from different parts of the U.S. to the people from Trinidad and Tobago, and that helped so much. You know, when we were introduced by Cliff, like, people here knew Cliff very much. So they would just, you know, get to know us. And because Cliff spoke so much about the culture here, you know, the people here, so we became more familiar. And so this is actually my probably like 26th time or so, like, visiting Trinidad. So through Cliff and also through Liam, we were able to visit, and we just got to know so many people from Trinidad. And also we've had many, many students from Trinidad and Tobago and other Caribbean islands coming to NIU to study and get the steel pan degree. So we got to know so much about Trinidad and Tobago through them as well. So it was extremely helpful to have Dr. Mia Gomerny Benjamin. She teaches at the University of Trinidad and Tobago. So she was able to write a supporting letter when I applied for Fulbright. And she's been extremely helpful since I've been here. You know, she connected to me to some people, and plus, you know, I've gotten to know a lot of people from here. So I was able to just give them a call or text them and just to, you know, hang out or, yeah.
Well, Yuko, you say that like it's simple. You're like, oh, you just text them, even though you're like, no, there's like 15, 20 years of relationship building and developing that respect and that appreciation to be able to say, I'm part of this. I want to switch that question a little bit with your own personal identity and culture and background.
Yeah.
I'm assuming isn't from Trinidad. Is that correct? Like, am I assuming that correctly? That's not like your personal identity, correct?
Right. So okay. I was born in Japan and lived in Japan for 10 years. And so my background, definitely my roots are in Japan. And
so I'm sorry to interrupt, but how are you mixing those elements, the person you are with another culture as you're talking? So sorry, that's where I wanted to be, and now I'm listening.
Yeah. So I think just being someone from Japan coming to the US really helped to structure like who I am today. I have a lot of appreciation for people with different backgrounds, because, you know, I had to learn American culture. And growing up in West Virginia, you know, it's very much different from, say, Illinois. So I have a lot of appreciation for, you know, different people from the U.S. You know, I think you mentioned these terms, you know, respect and appreciation. That is very, very important, especially when someone like me is learning an instrument from another country that is deeply attached to their culture and their identity. So me coming from Japan and experiencing different culture in the United States was extremely helpful for me to become who I am today and to appreciate cultures and people, identities of, you know, different people from different countries.
I love the idea that there is this deep, deep connection between the middle of the cornfield in Illinois.
Yes.
And Trinidad and Tobago. And NIU has a long legacy of steel pan, correct? And
yes,
wasn't there just an anniversary?
So the NIU steel pan was founded in 1973 by the late Al O'Connor. Al was born, I think he was from Long Island in New York. But he was into like so many different types of music, including contemporary music, experimental music, and he had deep appreciation and respect for music from different cultures. He and his wife Judy traveled to Trinidad, one of the Caribbean islands, and I always forget which one, on their vacation honeymoon, and that is where they encountered a steel band, and Al went to Crystal Lake to see the performance by the U.S. Navy steel band. So U.S. Navy had a steel band. And that is when he learned that Cliff Alexis was building and tuning steel pans for the Navy steel band. And he found where Cliff was. Cliff was in Minnesota at the time. And he would, contact him, and Cliff would be like, "Who are you? I don't know you." And like, no. But I was very consistent, and eventually Cliff was like, "Okay, like I'll speak with you." But so they built a very strong connection, very strong friendship relationship, and eventually I was able to convince Cliff to work for NIU, build steel pans for NIU. Because like I said, Al started the NIU steel band in 1973 with, I believe, just 7 instruments. And Al wanted to update the instruments to a better quality instrument. So Cliff was able to provide instruments. Then eventually Al was like, you should work at NIU.
Come do this.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know there were some resistance, but Al at the time was an associate dean for the College of Visual and Performing Arts, and he was able to have Cliff visiting staff or something like that. And eventually Cliff became an employee and the co-director of the NIU steel band. So and I think that was in 1985 when Cliff first started to work at NIU. So we have a long history of the connection between NIU and Trinidad,
That's unique for a big university, right? Like not every university has a program like what we've got, right?
Right. Oh, NIU is the only one. I mean, there are other universities in the U.S. where students can major in steel pan, but our story is very, very unique, and there were some stubborn, determined individuals, who wanted something, and they were able to create it. And I'm extremely thankful to them. And also, I want to mention the late Mr. Trilla, who was instrumental in getting students from Trinidad and Tobago to learn at NIU. And without his assistance, many people from Trinidad wouldn't have been able to come, and Professor Liam Teague being one of them. And now, of course, he is at NIU and continuing the legacy. So I'm very lucky to be a part of this NIU steel pan family.
It's like a hidden gem here at NIU.
Yeah.
So from like 7 students at the start to how many now, and how many instruments do you have?
We have around 30 instruments, I believe. Yeah. We're not using all of them, but at the moment, but yeah, we have quite a number of instruments and quite a number of students from Trinidad and Tobago, also from Antigua and Barbuda, Belize, and of course from the US. So.
And then you've also got there's a community steel band, correct?
Yes. And yes. Yeah.
Where did that come from? And how does one join and learn?
Oh, yes. So I started the Community School of the Arts steel band in 2012. And I actually had to step down from the position this past semester. So now it's taught by a graduate student, Nathaniel Guerra, and he's doing a fantastic work. And yeah, so what happened was I created it because steel band is very much attached to communities in Trinidad and Tobago. So I thought it would be a nice idea to give opportunities to community members in DeKalb. And, you know, like I started out with maybe 5 students and we went up to about 20 students. And some of the students are from DeKalb Sycamore area, but others are from Rock Falls, Naperville, Lombard. So some people travel to join the steel band because we just love it so much. Yeah, and it's available to like anyone. So like if anyone wants to join, you can simply just Google, you know, CSA, steel band at NIU, and you can find all the information.
You go, that's, I love that you're ingraining the background of community with, from the instrument, like the instrument's bringing that to us. And now it's like, no, if you're going to do this, it's part of a community and we need to create that as well. As you're looking back and also forward, right? I would say you're kind of right in that middle where you have expertise, you have a lot of knowledge. Is there something that you would still like to experience within your studies, within your experiences, or is there also just another instrument you would like to learn that you haven't even broached yet?
Yeah, so I feel like I'm actually doing that right now. Like receiving a Fulbright award to come to to Trinidad and Tobago, where I'm able to challenge myself as a researcher, something that I've never done. So I'm able to learn something new, like acquire a new skill set. And I'm hoping that my research is going to hopefully somehow help in finding a solution for younger generation to take more interest in learning how to build and tune steel pans. Yeah, so we can have more steel pan builders and tuners. But in addition to learning and researching, I'm also going to be joining a steel band here and playing in the panorama competition. So I'm able to do that. And I'm just trying to do as much as I can outside of steel pan as well. So in Trinidad, they're just like the U.S., there are people from so many different parts of the world, and there are people from Africa, India, Syria, China, Europe. So, and steel pan is very much an Afro-Trinidadian art form, even though, you know, there are many people from, you know, different background play. But I've been exposed to more Afro-centric culture. So I'm, you know, interested in learning more about Indo-Trinidadian culture and, you know, Syrian and Chinese, and like go to different events. Yeah, so I'm hoping to do that. And in terms of learning a new instrument, I'm not really interested only because I just have so much to do. But if I encounter an instrument that really moves me, then yeah, I can see myself wanting to learn it.
I love, see, when I ask that question to other musicians and artists in there, a lot of times it's very similar. They're like, I'm not there yet. Like, I'm still working on this one. Yeah. And so I appreciate that expertise. And here's a really weird question, and I'll hand it to Kristen as well, because you might want to think about this one. But do you have a favorite note, like on the steel pan? If there was one note you had to pick, you're like, it just always makes me feel something, positive, negative, whatever. You don't have to answer now, but if you do have it, we're here.
Okay. The answer is no. I don't have Perfect. Any specific note that I like, but I do really enjoy playing the bass steel pan. So that's the lowest range instruments. And so there are so many different types of steel pans, and steel pans are not standardized, meaning so there's a tenor steel pan in soprano range. And there are many different types of tenors. There are many different types of bass steel pans. So it doesn't mean like, okay, so I'm playing the bass steel pan at NIU, but that doesn't mean like I can just go to this steel band in Trinidad and just play. I have to learn where all the notes are. So that's just something very unique about the steel pan. Like, it's just not, it hasn't been standardized. I don't know if it ever will be standardized, because each steel pan is connected to various steel bands, and that's part of their history, that's part of their culture, and that's part of their identity. So I don't know if it ever will be standardized. However, there are, you know, standard steel pans that a lot of people use. So in the US, in Japan or Europe, you know, if they're purchasing a tenor steel pan, most of them would purchase this one kind of, yeah, this tenor steel pan.
Yuko, then, as someone like yourself is let's say, making a steel pan, an instrument from scratch, from nothing,
yes,
does that mean your instrument may sound different or have a different layout than maybe someone, your mentor or someone you learned from? And is that, like, interest? Is that really kind of cool that you get to have that person's creation impact the music, I guess?
Yeah, it's cool. But I do believe it needs to be standardized, at least in, you know, educational setting. For, you know, traditional steel bands in Trinidad and Tobago, okay, so that's one thing. But for educators, for students, it would be nice if they're standardized. And it is cool that I get to build steel pans using Cliff Alexis's patterns, but is that, you know, are they practical? Are those, like, good, you know, like, layout? Like, are there, you know, like, I haven't explored enough on other people's patterns. And that's actually one of the things that I'm, another thing that I'll be doing here. I'll be working with Musical Instrument of Trinidad and Tobago, or MITCO. It's one of the largest steel pan and most successful steel pan manufacturer in the world. And I will be starting to go to their facility this coming week to document their specifications and dimensions, measurements, and create a steel pan instruction manual. So, so I'm very much interested in how they create their steel pans, you know, what type of layout that they use. So I'm really excited about that. Yeah.
That's such a cool point, because, you know, as educators and with that background in all forms, and I use that term very liberally, we're always learning and sharing and passing along that knowledge. I find that interesting that you're like, this instrument is really based in a culture, but also if we want to keep it alive and we want to be able to spread it around and appreciate it to many generations coming, we do need to standardize it, which sometimes like you're intentionally losing those differences so that people can be more acceptable or approachable to that instrument. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, I agree with what you just said.
Okay.
I think it's cool. I was thinking the same thing, Russ, and I think it's really fascinating that a musical culture that has such a rich history and such a long standing history still has room for, there's innovation, there's still things that are happening to grow and not change the culture, but, like, the culture is still changing and evolving based on the people who are in it and the needs of the community around it.
Right, absolutely. And because it's so much connected to the tradition from Trinidad and Tobago, so, for example, when Cliff was alive, I didn't explore more, like, modernized or different types of steel pan, like, tools, methods, because to me, that was disrespectful to Cliff. And because it's so connected to tradition, it hasn't, in some ways, may have not evolved as quickly as, say, the hand pan industry. So hand pans originated from the steel pans. So the creators of hand pans were first steel pan builders and tuners. And hand pans are, so steel pans are a convex shape and hand pans are convex shaped. Steel pans we play with, steel pan sticks or mallets. Hand pans are performed with hands. Hand pans came around about like the year 2000, and hand pan manufacturers started to utilize hydroforming machines and robotics. And so in some ways, they are more advanced. They create their instruments not by hand. So once some of the older steel pan builders and tuners passed, that is when the newer ways to develop steel pans, I believe, became more accepted. And I feel like many steel pan builders, tuners, and manufacturers realize how in demand this instrument is and how in demand the builders and tuners are. And people have to wait, in some cases, 2 to 3 years to receive their instruments. We have to do something about it. So I believe a lot of people now are more accepting of exploring different ways to manufacture steel pans.
Well, I think in arts and those crafts that are very tradition built, there is always this tension. And not meaning tension is a bad way, but there's always this tension between tradition and technology and the survival of the craft.
Right.
And how do we hold on to those traditions, but advance it with the technology so that the craft can live on and it can continue? And it sounds like steel pan is also going through that series of tensions right now.
Right. I can say that is true. You know, so for people like me, who was exposed to, like, who learned so much about the steel pan and the culture of Trinidad and Tobago from a Trinidadian or Trinidadians. So it's very important to me to continue to show appreciation and respect for the people from Trinidad and Tobago. But at the same time, I can see how some people who learn the craft outside of Trinidad and Tobago, who may not know much about the culture or the history, to not really consider that aspect. And just, they will just go for it, you know, like try to innovate or invent various ways and just, try to advance the art form.
Yeah. Well, Yuko, this has been such a fun conversation and we appreciate you taking time out of your day to talk with us. If our listeners want to come experience NIU Steel Pan for their own, what are ways that they can follow and connect with the NIU Steel Pan program and band?
Yeah. So if you go to the NIU School of Music website, we have a calendar that shows when the performances are. I don't know the exact date of the steel band concert this year because I'm not there. So I'm
not there.
But I know it's in mid-November. It's on a Sunday. It always starts at 3 p.m. You can purchase your tickets online. So if you go to www.niu.edu/music, you can find tags where it says tickets or performances, and you can find out when the NIU Steel Band concert is, and also the CSA Steel Band concert will be happening on the very first Saturday in December, and that one starts at 5 p.m. So you can find out the information on NIU website. And it'll be great to have a lot of people coming to attending those concerts. So
wonderful. Well, thank you so much. Best of luck with all of your research and everything that you're doing while you're down there. Can't wait to reconnect with you when you come back and hear all of the cool things that you've done. And
great. Well, thank you so much for having me and have a wonderful weekend.
This has been a production of the STEAM Studio. Please make sure you like, subscribe, and leave a review to help others discover our shows. You can listen on platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you for listening to this STEAM Spotlight. Thank you to our partners, NIU STEAM and Northern Illinois University, for supporting this podcast. If you would like to learn more about the work we do, please check us out online at niusteam.niu.edu. Thank you so much for listening.